Big bank CEOs have their 10-year reunion with Congress. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams in for David Brancaccio. He's on assignment. CEOs from America's largest banks were on Capitol Hill Wednesday. The last time this group testified in front of the House Financial Services Committee, we were in the depths of the financial crisis. This time, Marketplace's Ben Bradford reports, the banks want to loosen rules put in place because of the crisis.
The bank CEOs argued against requirements that they raise a certain amount of capital to make sure they stay solvent in a future crisis.
At what point is stable enough, and at what point do you need to grow?
James Gorman of Morgan Stanley, Jamie Dimon of JPMorgan Chase, and Bank of America's Brian Moynihan argued that high capital requirements stifle lending.
That's $140 billion of loans we could do, as Jamie said, in terms of rule of small business lending that we can't do today because the capital has to be held without risk.
That's simply the wrong way to be thinking about capital.
NYU business professor Lawrence White says the safeguard is not like a reserve. It requires banks to use a certain amount of their own money rather than just relying on deposits from customers.
They had way too little skin in the game, and that is what really brought us to the brink of disaster.
The International Monetary Fund says a 15% capital requirement could have prevented most of the bank bailouts during the financial crisis. The current U.S. capital requirement for the biggest banks is 10%. I'm Ben Bradford for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. The UK has a deal with the European Union to delay Brexit until October 31st. That news is pushing European stocks slightly up this morning. The FTSE in London is up less than a tenth of a percent. Germany's DAX is up 0.1%. France's CAC 40 is up 0.5%. The Dow, S&P and NASDAQ futures are also up this morning, but in the 0 to 0.1% range. One downside of the record low unemployment we're experiencing is a severe labor shortage in the construction industry. 70% of construction firms said they were struggling to meet deadlines because they can't find enough workers. That's from a survey by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the USG Corporation. One reason, employers say, construction has a bad reputation, so the industry is trying to rebrand. Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
So are we good? Do we have everybody?
In a classroom near downtown Denver, a group of high school kids takes a quiz.
All right, you're going to have 10 seconds per question to answer, and here we go.
The students are on a field trip to the Construction Industry Training Council of Colorado to learn about apprenticeships. Executive Director Corey Gerlitz is giving the sales pitch.
What's the average salary for first-year apprentices in the construction industry?
The kids punch their guesses into an app on their phones.
$15 per hour.
And that was a couple years ago.
I've got people who are coming into the school right now, no experience. They're making anywhere from $15 to $17 an hour, depending upon their trades.
Okay. Wages are rising, Gerlitz says, because employers are desperate for workers like masons, pipe fitters, and electricians.
Crisis level. It is absolutely a crisis level.
Partly because of an image crisis. Jennifer Scanlon is CEO of USG Corporation, which makes building materials.
People think of construction as dirty jobs, jobs that only require brute strength, jobs that don't require real training or skills. And quite frankly, they view it as a job instead of a career.
That's what groups like Denver's Training Council are trying to change by talking up the high pay, the technology used on construction sites like drones and virtual reality, opportunities for women and for advancement.
If you want to excel, you don't have to lay brick your whole life.
That's Fred Soderberg, who teaches the masonry apprentices. At 68, he's now a superintendent for a large builder and has left his mark on Denver.
I've had the pleasure of doing Coors Field, the Broncos Stadium, the airport, and lots of big things.
21-year-old Chris Salas, a first-year apprentice, says he thought about other careers before taking up the family trade. His father and grandfather were masons.
I dreamed of, like, working in a bank and in the office and all that, but I started as a dad young, so I had to, you know, kind of, like, grow up and get a hard job and so it could give me a little bit more pay, you know?
Salas works full-time at a job site and takes this class one night a week. When he finishes his three-year apprenticeship, he can expect to make at least $30 an hour, or more than $60,000 a year. Soderberg, his teacher, wishes he could speed up the clock. Denver needs 100 more Chris Salases right now. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
The Masters Golf Tournament starts today. The event is steeped in traditions, from the green jacket to the azaleas that line the 13th green. And cheap food for fans. Ham and cheese on rye for $2.50, Georgia pecan caramel corn for $1.50. But as Marketplace's Andy Euler reports, fans will have plenty of other ways to part with their cash.
You can get one of those famous Masters pimento cheese sandwiches for $1.50. Add a craft beer and your total bill, $6.50. At a Chicago Cubs game, just a hot dog will set you back that much. Drew Wilkinson's been to the Masters three times.
You could spend the entire day there, literally leave 10 pounds heavier, and you're still going to be that heavy because your wallet is not that much lighter.
Why so cheap? Zacks stock analyst David Boren looked into that.
Augusta National does not mind leaving a little bit of money on the table.
He says the Masters is more interested in tradition than maximizing profit from egg salad sandwiches. But the tournament still makes around $120 million a year.
Of which less than $10 million is concessions, but almost $50 million is branded merchandise.
Like Masters shirts and hats. Again, Masters fan Drew Wilkinson.
You'll walk out of there easily spending hundreds of dollars.
If we made you hungry, mix up some cheddar, mayo, cream cheese, pimento peppers, add some spices, slather it on some white bread, and enjoy your pimento cheese sandwich. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Ew. I'm Kimberly Adams with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.